everybody, welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Carl Castaneda, and joining me today, directly to my left, John Lindemann.
Hi.
We're actually recording this from his beautiful home in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yes, the state.
Release the hounds. But also joining us, fan favorite Evan Birchfield.
Hello, everyone.
We finally got him on the show.
I don't know about fan favorite, more like fan favorite to beat up on.
My favorite.
And last up, all the way in Tallahassee, Florida, Mike Sklens.
I'm back once again. This has got to be like a streak for me.
You've Take me down to the now, South bro. Tallahassee there, Mike.
That's right.
You ever hear that? Right. Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, it's Last Child, Aerosmith. It's in Guitar Hero 2.
Well, okay, folks, let's go on into new business. And for the first time in a long time, I have new business.
You have new business.
I have new business.
Business?
And my business is as follows. That I have purchased Mario Strikers Charge for the Wii.
Really?
And it's good. It's really good, actually.
The first was quite fun, so.
I never played the first one that much. I played a demo of it in GameStop. That was about it. But this one's really good. It adds a kind of like a motion mechanic where you can you shake the Wiimote to push everyone in your way. And, like, you know, that more the more heavier psychic players can, you know, have more of a push.
Is it as physical as people have made it out to be? Is it going to be as dynamic as everyone makes it seem? Because soccer games where you just sit there and you twiddle your thumbs, it's kind of, like, as boring as watching real soccer.
Oh, no. This is actually the antithesis to real soccer because there's actually so much going on the screen at one time. It can be difficult to keep up with.
Really?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, you've got... it's four players on a team, one captain who's usually like, you know, one of the main characters like Yoshi, Mario, Luigi, whatever. And each captain has a special ability, so you press C and like Yoshi sends out, you know, shells and Mario becomes like 20 stories high and that sort of thing. And then the psychic players have their own abilities, like a hammer brother throws a bunch of hammers at the goalie and then while they're distracted, he makes a goal. And so it's really a lot of fun, and I haven't gotten a chance to try out the online play yet, but I'm eagerly awaiting trying it out and besting Mike in many, many matches when I get back to Tallahassee.
That won't happen.
So, yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. Oh, what's your old business?
My old business is that this weekend I was bored, so I played through Metroid Zero Mission because I've been watching the Game Trailers Metroid Retrospective, and it really put me in the mood to play Metroid, and I forgot how really insanely easy Zero Mission is.
Is it?
It's pretty easy. Yeah,
I beat it in 3 hours almost exactly, and it's really easy. So I'm going through and playing Fusion now just because I'm on a Metroid kick. And next week, I'm gonna get Super Metroid on the Wii, even though I have a cartridge for it. My SNES controllers are all mushy and crap.
I'm so definitely getting it. It's time to get it permanently stored on the Wii. I'm excited. I'm very excited.
$8 for what is the greatest video game of all time is a steal.
I agree.
You need to watch it with the hyperbole there, Sklens, but I'll agree.
Oh, my friend, it's not hyperbole.
Yeah, it's true. Nothing will ever top
Super business
Metro.
Too.
Oh, really? Do you? What's your old business?
Yeah, my old business is that I started playing Trace Memory, which...
Which, that's really old.
P.S., the game blows. I don't know if anybody noticed. It starts out kind of being interesting because it's like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen in this interesting plot. I like it when a plot starts out and you don't have any idea how it could possibly be real. It's like this unreal starting plot, and then they try to make it real. I enjoy that. What doesn't make any sense is why you would make an adventure game, which is already a pretty dull genre, kind of... interacting between objects in the environment and objects that you pick up, interaction between some sort of gold digging machine and a metal brush. It's like, why you would make a game that's got that such a boring already gameplay that you would add a completely boring personality to it, such as a 14-year-old girl and a 15-year-old ghost. And it's just so retarded. And I like adventure games. I really like adventure games. Because I like the way that if you match a really interesting story with really dull gameplay, it can be amazing. Grim Fandango, that is my pick for one of the best PC games, maybe the best video games ever made. And that's because even though you just run around and you try to combine items and give them to characters and stuff, it's got the best story, the most amazing aesthetics, amazing music and graphics. I thoroughly recommend that game. No one should ever play Trace Memory ever.
Evan, listen to me. The developer of that game, Sing, actually made a new game recently called Hotel Dusk. You probably heard of it.
Yeah, I did.
It's really, really good. Go out and buy it.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot. I'm not finishing Trace Memory. I'm not going to finish it.
No. It's way better. It's got a way better story. It's a lot. Okay. The characters have a lot more character to them. It's really, really good.
Okay. Yeah. No. I'll give it a shot.
And the main character looks just like you.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Kyle Hyde. Kyle Hyde and Burstfield really separated at birth.
I'm vain enough that totally sells me. That totally sells me.
All right, folks. Well, let's go right on into community. First up, we've got the hot topic. And you gotta love Ty Sugar. He comes up with the best questions. This week, it's will you buy Metroid Prime 3 Corruption?
I don't know. What's going to... Jeez. This is difficult.
The clear choice is no.
Whoa. Wait a second, Mike Sklens, the contrarian in the group. Why don't you tell us why?
I will buy Metroid Prime 3 eventually, but come August 27th, I will be knee-deep in Bioshock, and nothing will pull me away.
Okay, unbeknownst to you, I'm sure Bioshock's going to be a great game. Unbeknownst to you, Bioshock is going to be 15 hours long. So as soon as you're done with it, Metroid Prime 3 may be out.
I'm going to play it again and again and again.
You could probably buy them both on the same day. Just give a 15-hour gap in between buying Bioshock and then buying Metroid, and you'll be done with it. I mean, seriously.
The only game that poses any threat right now to my enjoyment of Bioshock is if next Wednesday Jeff Minter's Space Giraffe finally hits Xbox Live Arcade. It's scheduled to come out any week now, so. And I will buy it in a heartbeat.
Well, there you go.
I think I'm actually going to buy Bioshock and Metroid, and then I'm going to take them home, throw them into an octagon, and see which one survives, and then I'll play that.
That's great. Well, that's great.
Let's see what our good readers thought. Smoke39 says that he's going to buy it, but his expectations honestly aren't that high. The first Prime game was a good proof of concept, but in his opinion, Prime 2 was a step back in terms of recreating the spirit of 2D games in 3D. The addition of the translators and keys are arbitrary items to enforce a more linear path, and it really bugs him.
So can we respond to this before we move on to the next one?
Sure, of course. Okay? That's what the point is.
Okay, because I agree with most of what he says here about the translators and keys being arbitrary items. That's very true. What I really don't agree with is the concept that what the Prime games or any 3D game has to capture the spirit of the original. Although I think that's a great thing that Zelda and Metroid both have been able to do in ways. They also have to continue to expand. And the Metroid Prime 2, I believe, did a much better job of creating a world that was really unique and having a more interactive story. Things that we haven't really seen in Metroid before. So capturing the spirit or not, that game has a really amazing environment.
A lot of people don't like a more interactive story with their Metroid. They very much prefer the sense of desolation on an alien planet.
Sure, and I'm with you there. I think the isolated perspective and that's very good, and another Prime game could do it. But if every Prime game is going to do that, then every Prime game is going to start the same with her losing her items, finding her items, fighting the bosses. And
well, that's every
formulaic.
Metroid game. Every Metroid game is started like that, not just every Metroid.
Every Mario game, every Zelda game. I mean, they all kind of have the same sort of layout. But what I've always liked about Metroid is kind of they really do a good job of kind of getting across that you're sort of unearthing facts about like the Chozo Empire or like all of this. There's like a real sense of ancientness, if I can use that word. Like just like, you know, the whole thing is like, oh, like you actually feel like you're on some faraway world and you're the only person there who's kind of like this witness to the whole fall of the Chozo Empire or like, you know, the invasion of the Ing or anything like that.
And I agree. Really cool. I agree. And I think both those games do that. Very much, and while I think the 2D nature of Super Metroid doesn't necessarily allow for that same kind of interaction between a foreign dead race and a new one. That's just me, though.
Well,
it's
very present in Metroid Zero Mission. That's 2D, and the sense of Chozo history is very deep in Metroid Zero Mission.
But game's actually got dialogue in it, and it's
very sparse.
I think it's more than anything we've ever seen on back in the original three Metroid games.
Yeah, I mean, it's very obvious that Zero Mission is made sort of post-Prime.
Yeah. I agree.
Sure. Well, we've got another comment here from Ian Sane, who makes the case that Metroid lacks the brand name with younger fans, and as such, will not really sell. I mean, it had that huge six-year absence by not appearing on the N64. And so he's basically making the case that Metroid Prime 3 will not be a big seller.
Well,
I'm inclined to agree.
I'm not. I understand his argument of the weak branding of the Metroid franchise, and I agree with that on some level, but also the Wii is in the middle of a huge drought and tons of people own Wii.
And it's still selling more than any other system.
And tons of people own these systems, and you know, they want new software for them, and that software is not coming, but Metroid Prime 3 is, and it will sell well because there will be very little competition for it.
So since we're in the hot topic, I want to make a comment on the community of the Nintendo World Report forums and Ian Sane in particular.
Uh-oh.
I like Ian. I like Ian a lot because Ian always says what he thinks, but that's also a problem because I find that I find him to be a kindred spirit in that way. The problem with saying whatever you think means that sometimes you say things that are wrong. In this case, he didn't answer the question at all. Will you buy Metroid Prime 3? He doesn't say yes or no. He says that Metroid lacks the brand name with younger fans. They don't know what Metroid is. There are people who think Ninja Gaiden and Prince of Persia are new franchises. Blah, 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 blah. Answer the question.
Evan, before you put your foot in your mouth, he did. I just took a quote from his post.
What, his post is like super long?
No. He has multiple posts in the thread. I just took this one because I thought it was a good quote, and as such, I put in the thread, you know, for conversation's sake.
Okay.
So as such, because Evan always says what he thinks, sometimes he says things that are wrong.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna go and defend myself just before you make me look like a dumbass. You are taking little excerpts off of something that I don't have. I'm not looking at, and you're presenting them to me and saying, "Aha, look at this." So I'd rather like to throw that back at you, Mr. Moderator.
Evan has been ambushed. he has been hornswoggled.
Nonetheless, I do think that Metroid not appearing on N64 was a good and bad thing. I agree with Ian that it was bad for branding, but good because it would have sucked.
Yeah, it would have sucked a lot. Just bad for branding.
I can never understand why Nintendo just seems to try to kill the Metroid franchise. I mean, it never really puts any, it never tries to promote it. If you look at any Mario game, even something like Mario Party, it will get so much more push behind it than any Metroid game ever will. I can't understand that.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's very marketable these days. I mean, in the 80s and early
that's,
90s,
no,
I guess,
that's,
you know?
It's BS that it's not marketable because all of
yeah,
the...
If, I mean, if Halo of, is, how can Metroid
yeah,
not
Halo be? Is, Gears of War is, it's all the same. It's future Space Marine versus Alien Horde, except it's a female Space Marine
except
in Metroid, and it's more exploration.
Except Halo has no personality.
I kind of disagree with that. I think that they're very different because we have the difference between games that have a very cinematic story, and for Metroid, it is what we already talked about, the sense of isolation, uncovering the story
very
through the
personal.
Gameplay. Yeah, it's much more personal with at the same time with a character that doesn't talk. So I'd say that I think Metroid is a lot more aesthetically concerned with the way a player feels, whereas I think the other games, Bioshock may have that, but I don't think Halo has that. I think Halo has something different, which is
Bioshock
good, but
is
different.
Built around that. So
yeah, about how do you feel in this environment that is foreign? That's the way. That's where these two games, why they're coming out on the same day, is
no,
so
they come. They
don't. Ridiculous.
Metroid got pushed back, so they're a week apart now.
Oh.
Well, there you go. Alrighty, folks. On that note, let's go on into listener mail. And our first question, I'm going to turn it over to our boy, Mike Sklens.
Last week, I told you, nay, I promised you that I would answer the first question that came into the mailbag once the episode went up. And it came in, I think, within an hour or 2 hours of the podcast going up. It is from Mashiro, and he says, Do you feel that Nintendo doing daily updates for Smash Bros. Brawl is destroying our Nintendo community? The Smash Bros. Threads on the internet are always in a perpetual war due to these updates. When will the madness stop, Nintendo World Report? When will it stop? And I'm here to tell you that it's not going to stop, because it seems like Nintendo just is ramping the blog up. I mean, in the past 2 weeks, we've gotten a new character each week. You know, last week we had Ike from Fire Emblem, and this week we had the nondescript Pokemon trainer. And it just seems like it's not going up. You know, get used to your war. You know, go buy some war bonds. You know, get some battle armor, because you are going to have to be walking into those forums fully armed, ready to shout at people your opinions on how cool / lame Pokemon trainer truly is.
Well, there's your answer. That's Mike's crazy mailbag, a feature we will try to have every week.
That's right.
Now.
Next week, this trend continues. We have such a good response from my crazy mailbag that I will once again answer the first question that comes into the mailbag after this episode goes live on Thursday afternoon. So I don't care what it is about. It can be about video games. It can be about ponies. It can be about... I don't care what it's about. You can make it about anything, and I will answer your question no matter how ridiculous or absurd or vulgar.
It's an all answers must go sale.
No.
No, staffers are exempt.
No, yeah. Staff members of Nintendo World of War are not eligible for this promotion. I'm sorry.
That is terrible.
Well, we've actually got another listener mail question from Adolf, who real asks... One. Yeah, his real question, which is, when is America getting that crazy tingle game for the DS? Europe is getting that in September. Why isn't it not coming to America at all? And that's a good question. I mean, if it's going to be translated into English, you'd think that they would just, you know, change, you know, color with a U to color with an O, and, you know, just kind of put it through. But apparently, you know, it's not happening confirmed anyway. So
just import it.
That's the honest answer.
More importantly, the fact that it's out in Europe, what does that say about Europe?
Oh,
I don't know. I'm asking that question.
John Lindemann poses the serious topics.
I don't know.
What's up with that Europe?
Yeah, really.
You know, I guess it's just to tide them over since they're not getting Brawl this year.
Just import this game because it's probably going to be hilarious.
Yeah, I remember Chris Kohler really liked it when he played the import from Japan. So, you know, bodes well for the game.
Why aren't we getting that game?
I think it'll happen eventually. I think Nintendo just hasn't done it yet because they're too focused on other things.
They're going to get rid of all of the innuendo is what they're going to do, because Nintendo's great at censoring their games from keeping out any offensive content. So I wouldn't be surprised if they just decided that they've got to do a huge localization effort on that. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they'll release it and they'll try and market it to kids or girls or something.
Well,
but...
if the Euro version is full of all the innuendo and all the sex stuff, I'm sure it'll be good.
But Europe can handle it.
Exactly.
America can't.
So I might just import.
Okay? The world of... When Madden is the top-selling game in our country, we cannot handle that crazy tingle game.
Hey, man, Madden's out tomorrow. You better not be dissing the Madden fans. Hey. I mean, I'm not one of them, but...
I'm actually in line right now.
I was never big into football, but I was always more of an NCAA fan.
Right. Well, with that in mind, we're going to go ahead and move on to the new segment right after this quick break. So, see you on the other side. Back from that quick break, and first up on the news docket today, SmashBros.com reveals Pokemon Trainer.
New challenger approaching.
New character in Smash Bros. Brawl. Basically, he's going to be able to use Squirtle, Ivysaur, and Charizard, though only one at a time.
He stands in the background. That is the most important part.
Yes.
And he stands in the background.
And this is very cool, but what does it mean for other Pokemon besides Pikachu appearing in the game?
I think it definitely diminishes the chances of other Pokemon showing up as fully playable characters.
Yeah, Pikachu, we may see Mewtwo again. I'll bet we may see something that's really cool from the new game, but that's about it. I doubt we'll have any more than three other playable Pokemon. Jigglypuff, I want to make a return. Jigglypuff and Zelda are my two characters of choice. And really,
my big question now, this is probably a stupid question. The answer is probably what I think it is, but... The game says that you can switch between these Pokemon, and that, But the real question is, if you're the Pokemon trainer, do you have any direct control over the movement of your Pokemon on the battlefield? Because obviously you can issue them commands like, you know, do your fire attack, Charizard, but that, you know, just like in real Pokemon. But if you really are going to be playing the actual Pokemon trainer, will you instead be issuing commands instead of physically controlling the Pokemon?
I like you're going,
I think it's an interesting concept. I don't think it's going to happen. I think you're going to end up actually playing as one of the three Pokemon, whichever one you have out there. But the fact is that if you're choosing the actual Pokemon trainer, there is a chance that you might not be have direct control over the Pokemon. You might instead just be saying, Squirtle, do Bubble Ray, or, you know, and he'll do that, you know, when you command it. But he'll move himself around the battlefield and get himself back up on the level if he falls.
Yeah, knowing the dynamics of Smash and the way that your triple jump and all the different various moves for getting back on the level after you've been thrown off, knowing all of that, I sincerely doubt that they would remove direct control. That it wouldn't make sense, even though it would be, I agree, very unique. And if anybody can make it work, it would be the guys who are working on this with Sakurai. But it's not going to happen. They're going to make it, each of those characters is like having a playable Pokemon with maybe some extra quirks because you're actually the trainer.
I do like the idea that you are forced to rotate through them, otherwise they will become less powerful.
Yeah, yeah. And it's very true to what they're doing, is they're showing that they're actually very concerned with keeping their characters very true to their original games. Instead of just having playable Pokemon, you've also got the idea of playing a Pokemon trainer and introducing the dynamic of what a Pokemon trainer has to go through in the Pokemon games.
Yeah,
and they've always been doing that. So.
And on top of that, it's going to keep people from spamming Charizard, because, you know, like with the Zelda Sheik mechanic, you know, no one really plays Zelda. You know, so many people just choose Sheik and play Sheik the whole time, and there's nothing forcing you to use that dynamic. But this time with this character, there is. I kind of think if Sheik comes back in Brawl, she'll be a separate character.
I don't think it's a he, by
there's
the way.
Literally no reason. Okay, if Zelda's a tranny, then Sheik is a he. Fine, but there's no reason if you can switch between the characters, and there's no reason not to switch back. There's no reason again for them to be the same character.
I think that they're gonna, maybe they'll introduce some sort of limit like they are here with Pokemon Trainer, or they'll just maybe try and make Zelda more, the switch between the two in Melee is too long to make switching between the two a viable option in the midst of gameplay. You have to wait until, like, you want to know that you want to use Zelda's magic attacks and everybody's off the playing field, so you have time to switch. There, so if they could improve the dynamic so the two interact better, I think that they'll do that.
Instant switch, yeah, it'd be a little more interesting, because then you could literally chain moves with, you know, both the characters at the same time. But like I said, I honestly think that Sheik will show up as a separate character, and anyone who says Sheik is a he is a retard, because they are the same person.
Hey, do you see any breasticles up top?
Okay, have you seen, you know, any number of movies where a female dresses up as a male and tapes her breasts down?
Yes, but that's not the case here. Look. Mike. You don't know Sheik like I do, okay?
Okay.
Your experience with Victor Victoria obviously has not taught you anything, Carl.
All right. Sheik is not a male, because there would have to be a sex change involved with the change from Zelda to Sheik, and that is happening.
It's possible.
It's magic.
You want to geek out? Yeah, it's the magic. It's the magic of Zelda and her abilities.
She magically grows a penis. Yeah.
It's the Triforce.
the Triforce of wisdom allows her to polymorph, I guess. Yeah.
Look, there are tremendous leaps of faith that you make with these games. All right, we're trying to believe that there have been several dudes who look exactly the same who go out and save the world every time. Let's believe that a girl can become a boy for a set amount of time.
No, she can dress as a male and pretend to be a male without actually being a male, dude.
This is a tremendous rat hole. We've already spent too much
time on this confused.
Anyway,
this is too much for Lindemann's frail little mind.
he's breaking into pieces before me. But, let's go ahead and move on, please. All right, so, you know, we've had 2 weeks, two characters revealed. You know, just as...
Well, what do you guys think is... Let me pose a question. What do you think is the big reveal next week if we get a new character? Who do you think
it'll be?
Well,
that's what I was going to ask, yeah.
I would like to bring up...
Snake,
like to bring
hasn't
up,
been...
I would like to bring up something that I've seen on the internet. There, you know, obviously Sonic rumors have been floating around, Sonic and Smash Brothers forever, but now there's more credence towards it because someone sent into Joystick today an image from a Best Buy Canada flyer for the game, and it's got, you know, a bunch of characters standing there. It's got like Link and Pikachu and Kirby and stuff, but Sonic is right there with them. And apparently there was, yeah.
Really?
So I'm not going to say it's real because it's, you know, it's extremely easily possible that it's a complete fake.
But we are on the internet right now. Yeah, so
The fact is that, you know, if it is real, you know, I mean, obviously he's the number one requested character and Sonic and Mario are already appearing in another game together. So it seems like it's almost a done deal at this point.
Yeah, no, everybody knows Sonic's going to be in the game. It's just a matter of whether Nintendo's going to admit it beforehand or going to make it a secret character.
No, they will not. They will reveal it beforehand, but it will be very late in the game when Smash Brothers is almost about to come out. They will reveal it as the big shocking announcement to, you know, get a big push of hype right before the game's out.
Yeah. Sometime around Thanksgiving. I think what they're going to do before then is they'll probably show us what Kojima's been doing with the game just as far as the level he designed and hopefully Snake. I really want to just see.
Well, but we've already seen Snake. I'm talking about which new characters will be revealed.
Oh, but you said what's the big reveal going to be? And the big reveal varies from new arenas to new plot elements to just new details about characters that have already been announced. And I think that one of the things that they're gonna do very soon is give us a full expose on Snake. That's just what I think. But maybe I'm wrong.
But they've been exposés.
Super Smash Brothers Brawl prequel to Metal Gear Solid 4 confirmed.
Yeah, they've done you know, exposés on other characters, and they'll explain special moves, but the article will only have two special moves listed, so I don't think we're going to see some huge, like, you know, 5,000-word article on Snake show up on the blog one day. It's not designed for that kind of content.
I think we... Okay, well, whatever. I still think it's going to happen, so you're dumb.
I could see perhaps a week of Snake where a little bit is revealed every day, but the idea of the doling out little bits of information on a daily basis does not fit with your giant solid Snake expose idea.
Mashiro is so right. The Super Smash Brothers blog is killing us. It is destroying us entirely.
It's destroyed this podcast right now. Look, we're fighting like animals.
You really are. Sheik is a man, damn it.
You guys can't see it right now, but Lindy has his foot in Carl's mouth right now.
Yep.
They are fighting right.
No, there. I think Carl's doing a good enough job of that himself.
Oh, hey. Clever Mr. Squints. We'd like it back to Tallahassee. We'll see what happens. See whose foot is in whose mouth.
Ding, ding, ding.
Anyway. So, I think we should just move on to the next news story.
Sounds
good.
This
is tapped. All right. Well, Metroid Prime 3, Corruption, we were talking about it earlier, but it actually had a trailer up on the Wii Shop channel this week.
The funny thing here the funny thing here is that, like, merely, like, within 48 hours of IGN posting a blog about how there's no Metroid hype, Nintendo flipped the Switch.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. And I think what's even more interesting here is that it's a streaming video. Now, you'll recall, about 5 episodes ago, I brought up that Nintendo might be streaming content over the Wii Shop channel. And Johnny poo-pooed this idea, saying that I was stupid. So
you're still
stupid now, Mr.
You are still talking. Back then, you were talking about streaming actual game content. And people are going to play a game a lot more often than they're going to watch a Flash video.
Carl, you were saying that we're going to get Guitar Hero songs downloadable through the Wii. And I'm telling you right now, it's not going to happen.
Look, the specifics of what I said are not important.
Because they invalidate what you said.
But what's important here is that Nintendo is putting out, finally, some Metroid Prime 3 coverage. And what's even more cool is that in another podcast that I actually did with Wendy, episode 40, if I remember correctly, we talked about Nintendo putting up preview channels on the Wii. And we both thought it was a great idea, and sure enough.
That's right, Nintendo folks. We called it. Radio Free Nintendo called it. 25 episodes ago.
25 weeks
half a year ago, we called this.
I think there's got to be a statute of limitations on that, to the point where it's like you predict something, you can predict anything 6 months in advance.
It's our Stephen Colbert moment. Don't ruin it.
Man, why you gotta hate? Why you gotta hate?
I'm sorry. I just think that I was pretty much when the Zelda date and the Wii date were like totally mysterious. People were throwing out 5 dates at a time and saying it's gonna be one of these 5, and I was always like, well, sure, you threw out 5 dates and they're all in the month of
okay,
August.
No, the fact that anyone who didn't predict the Sunday before Black Friday as the launch date for the Wii obviously is a total fucking moron.
You need to, Mike, you're talking about Pale, our good friend Mike Gammon.
Anyone, it is classic Nintendo. That is the day they release their system on. They have it locked up for now until eternity, Sunday before Black Friday in America.
Actually, no, I think I've got that wrong. I think Pale was on the same boat as you. Some idiot was going on, but no, I'm with you.
I think that might have been you, Evan.
Yeah, actually, probably was. I mean, I don't know.
Well, our last news story for the day, actually, speaking of Evan, one of his favorite games on the GameCube was Chibi-Robo, and it looks like the sequel on DS, Chibi-Robo Park Patrol, I think it's called, is going to be a Walmart-exclusive game. Now, we don't have this confirmed, but GameStop has said that
this is
true.
What do you mean GameSpot?
So...
Wasn't it GameSpot?
Yeah.
Okay, is it GameSpot? Yeah, it's GameSpot. I get the two confused. so that lends some credence to it, and I think it's a very interesting proposal.
Yeah, it's. I think it's disappointing.
Well,
but,
let me go over exactly why. I will drop some knowledge on you, dear listener, this would happen. Chibi-Robo Park Patrol is not a game that is going to sell very well. As such, Nintendo does not want to print a lot of units because they are going to sit somewhere on shelves or in inventory, you know, taking up valuable space and money. So Nintendo decides to go with one retailer so they can limit their production so they don't have to send it to everybody and have nobody buy the thing. So they choose Walmart because Walmart is everywhere. It's that simple.
So,
it's a supply chain management
recoup,
side thing.
Mike, let's listen to your logic here. To recoup the distribution, the development costs for this game, they've decided to make fewer copies of it rather than more, because they're anticipating that no one's going to buy it, so they're limiting where people can get it.
They're not, but that's the thing, they are not limiting it to where people can get it. I mean, they are limiting it to Walmart, but they are not in any way geographically limiting it, because Walmart is freaking everywhere.
Well, all I'm saying is that it doesn't make sense. If you have a game that you want to do better than you anticipate, I would think you would throw more money at it rather than less. I think you would make more copies and do more advertising rather than say, you know what, no one's going to want this, so we're going to hide it. That's retarded. And I don't know why Nintendo's doing it. Personally, I mean,
well, think
it,
of it, okay.
All this reminds me of...
Put it as a parallel to indie cinema. You know, not every movie, you know, Danny Boyle's Sunshine won't make it to every Megaplex because it's just not big enough and it doesn't have the budget or, you know, the marketing power to make it to every market, so it only plays at independent theaters. This is the exact same situation.
Okay, no, it is not the exact same situation, because since you brought up movies, I can go ahead and tell you that the reason why independent films, and Sunshine's far from an independent film, but the reason smaller movies like Sunshine don't make it to big theaters is because those bigger theaters don't want them.
Okay,
as soon as those smaller movies make more money, then those bigger theaters will take them. That's not the case here. It's not as though only Walmart wants Chibi-Robo and everybody else is looking at them and saying, oh, we don't want that game. They'll put it on the shelves because it doesn't cost them anything. They don't have to worry about it, and then they'll sell it real cheap later on and make their money back. It's no problem for them. Nintendo's limiting it, and the distributor of a film does not do that. The distributor of a film wants their movie on as many screens as possible.
You're right.
So I just think I poo-poo you and this idea.
You have ruined my metaphor. You are correct, sir.
Now, do we know how many copies Chibi-Robo sold on GameCube? Two, or maybe three.
Three if you count Evan's copy.
Yeah.
I got mine for free, so I guess I didn't do my part. So
yeah, I actually have a copy of it as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, really, people need to just go buy the game at Walmart and prove Nintendo wrong. At the very least, this news about it being Walmart exclusive is getting it out to the masses.
I think it lets them more easily focus their marketing dollars towards it. And plus, Walmart, if it's an exclusive to Walmart, Walmart will be putting some of their own marketing dollars behind it that would not exist if the game had been available at every retailer.
Sure. I just don't think the words Walmart exclusive necessarily endears me to buying a product.
There have been some games that have been exclusive to GameStop, haven't there? I seem to remember that happening with some smaller, like,
I think one or two,
handheld
but
gamers.
I don't remember it ever being successful. I mean, it's like, to me, Walmart exclusive is like saying that I have to go to like a NASCAR track to buy something. It's like, I'm not going to do that. So,
well, that's because you live in Oregon. So,
I mean, maybe that's because in Oregon we have some class. Maybe that's what
you know. I will give you that. Oh. No, I will give you that because I do not agree much with Walmart's philosophies, but it's still there if you are only going to pick one retailer, they are the obvious choice.
Sure.
See, what I'd like to see, the Evan Birchfield promo tour for Chibi Robo Walmart. I'd like to see that, like, just go all around the country to every single Walmart, you know, and just dressed up actually like Chibi Robo.
Exactly. Guys, have this huge extension cord just sticking out of his ass.
Nintendo World Report exclusive. I will make a video diary of going around and advertising Chibi Robo at Walmarts. Someone just got to give me the funds.
Well, you know, speaking of the game's actual quality, I was chatting with staff alum Dan Bloodworth, who's over at Game Trailers now, and he got a copy some weeks ago, and he said it was great. So it must be a good game.
Yeah, no, it is.
I'm sure everyone will be happy with it.
It is. I played the demo at last year's E3. Dan says that it's just more of the same there. It's pretty much the Chibi Robo on the GameCube, except outdoors, with a lot of extra features and cool touchscreen controls. There's no reason to not get it. The only reason I guess people don't want it is because it doesn't have a buff guy shirtless holding a gun.
All right, guys. Well, that actually cuts us up for news today. When we come back, it's Evan Birchfield versus RFN, the big bout. So you want to stay tuned.
Sweet.
Alrighty, folks, it's the last segment of the show. Evan Birchfield versus Radio Free Nintendo. Now, let's not make it seem like we're all against Evan.
I am.
Well, Lindy is.
I also am.
And Mike is as well. And I am a little bit. But that's not to say that we're all against Evan, because there are some things we agree on. You know, the pronunciation of his state, Oregon.
No. Whoa. It's Oregon.
The fact that we all hate Evan? We all agree on that.
We all agree on it.
The fact that we all agree, he looks like the guy from Hotel Dusk.
He does, indeed. Though. They look exactly the same.
Duskfield.
Anyway, I think Evan should sue Nintendo because he does look. I think they stole his life through this game.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad.
But that's beside the point.
That's just considering I'm such a massive celebrity on the internet.
Well, of course. You're the fan favorite.
Yeah, I guess. Anyways, what's the point of this segment? I don't really feel so comfortable about it being called Evan Birchfield versus Radio Free Nintendo.
See, he's already starting. He's already starting. He's getting lippy. I mean, here we go, folks. I'm dropping the gloves right about now.
All right, well, we talked about Arkham games about two episodes ago. And in it, one of us must have said something to the effect of, some games can be art, but others cannot. And Evan disagrees with this. Evan, go.
All right. Well, my main thing is the whole thing got started, of course, because of Roger Ebert. Roger Ebert's out there saying that games aren't necessarily art. And then he kind of clarified his opinion a little bit, but he's really not making too much of a point. He obviously doesn't have a lot of experience with games. But then wasn't it Clive Barker who came back and defended it in the worst way possible by talking about experience and personal opinions and all this other stuff? It doesn't make any sense. Well, I think we really have to understand, and something that that Mike and Wendy were really eager to say is that some games are art and some aren't. I completely disagree with that. I have to disagree with that. And I want everyone to know that even if you disagree with me on this, you must know that there are other opinions, and that it's not up to each person to say, oh, this is art and this isn't, as though our own personal opinion about something actually changes what it is. The truth of the matter is that everything that is held within the artistic realm, that is, everything that is meant to be art, and this is an opinion that pisses people off, but it's been true ever since modern art started with Marcel Duchamp and the toilet on the wall. It's just the history of art. We have to accept it. If it's a video game, it's art, because it is comprised of images, sounds, and control. That is your sense of sight, touch, and hearing. All of those things are involved, and we usually are interacting with a narrative. That is, how can that not be art? Now, art's not a compliment. So when we say that Superman 64 is art, we're not in any way saying it's a good game. We're just saying that it was an attempt to do something, to express something, maybe an emotion, an idea, just fun. Fun is an artistic thing.
A milking of a franchise.
Yeah. Yeah. No, sure. How many? I mean, look at the Lord of the Rings. That's art. I mean, we want to talk about milking of a franchise. We've got all of this stuff. It's things that aren't good can still be art because art's not a compliment. And all I want to say to the world is that Roger Ebert's wrong. Roger Ebert is very wrong. Video games are art. And that having control in a video game isn't a reason to say that it is not the singular work of a person or a group. The beautiful thing about video games is that unlike movies, which are usually the result of one or two or three people, video games are the result of many people. And that's beautiful.
Wait, how are movies the result of three people?
Well, when you talk about the main artistic contribution...
The writer, the director, and all the actors, and the cinematographer, and I don't know,
the editor,
the special effects guy, and mm-hmm. the lighting guy, and everyone. They're all, everyone's little bit contributes to the art of that film.
I agree. But that's the whole nature of auteur theory, which is something that I think the video game world has to start to wrestle with. How does auteur theory in film affect video games? We consider Shigeru Miyamoto to be very much the director of his games or the overseer of Nintendo now that he doesn't have as much direct control. How has his artistry really impacted the company? Well, he's had to disseminate his philosophy amongst everybody and have everybody on the same page. That's very similar to what happens on a film. When you think of a Kubrick film, you don't think of it as, like the film Dr. Strangelove, you don't think of it as a James B. Harris film. James Harris definitely produced it. He produced Lolita too, but we don't think of those as James B. Harris films or even Harris Kubrick films, which is what they're called. They're Stanley Kubrick films because his art is there.
But Kubrick is such a large personality and such a visionary that his idea easily disseminates its way through an entire film, but you could not say the same for Michael Bay. I guess you could say the same with Michael Bay. Michael Bay's personality does permeate the entire film. It's just that his personality is sour. Let me look at someone more like Brett Ratner. I don't know, first
or
of all.
Or Gore Verbinski.
I would like to know how someone like Brett Ratner gets his name attached to the commercial for Rush Hour 3 as, quote, a Brett Ratner film. When did he get that much cred in Hollywood? He's just a dude who knows how to kind of direct an action movie. He's not Michael Bay who knows how to over-direct an action movie. He's Brett Ratner.
Sure.
Well, then let me ask this. But then by that same token, if that's true about Brett Ratner, are we not giving Stanley Kubrick too much credit?
Well, I think it's possible, but my opinion, and what I believe is the most feasible way to look at this, is that the director, as the primary artist involved, as well as writers and other people, but all under the director, auteur theory presupposes that if the director fails in his responsibility, he's still responsible for that. So Brett Ratner's complete lack of stylization and the fact that the movies may be more defined by the writer is still... falls under Brett Ratner's shoulders.
Evan, I want to stop you for a moment because I just want to ask a question. I want you to explain auteur theory for our listeners in case some of them don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, auteur theory is the premise in film that the director is the ultimate artist and that the main premise behind it was thrown about by Andrew Saris in the 60s. The sentence is that the worst film by a good director is going to be better than the best film by a bad director. And so what he did was he said, instead of dividing films by the era they were made or by the genre or even by the writer, let's divide them by the director. Let's say that there are films by John Ford and there are films by Howard Hawks. And if we compare Hawks to Ford, we see a difference.
So, okay, there's many to easily explain it, Steven Spielberg has often said that the only film he ever regrets doing is Hook, which, first of all, on a side note, I think is crazy because I loved Hook. But what that would basically say is that Hook – is essentially, we'll say, Spielberg's worst movie, but even though it is his worst movie, it is still better than Transformers, which may be Michael Bay's best.
Well, maybe. I mean, if you want to say Michael Bay is a bad director, you can say that. I don't think so. But
that sounds pretty self-evident just because people think Spielberg's a good director.
Well,
Spielberg is
a
good director, but fine.
I mean, but that just sounds like it kind of goes out in the realm of opinion. And it's, frankly, it just smacks.
Well, that's why I picked Hook, because Spielberg says that Hook is the movie he regrets doing, the only movie he regrets doing.
Yeah.
So, Lindy, tell me more about this. Why do you think that smacks of elitism?
Well, I mean, it just thinks that it's something that I would expect to come from an art critic, because they would be telling you, "Hey, I know more than you. This director is good. This director is bad." And so, mm-hmm. therefore, my auteur theory, the auteur's theory would reinforce the theory of somebody or the opinion of somebody who says, hey, I think this guy's bad and this guy's good. Mm-hmm. Therefore, this guy is good. I think he's good. Therefore, he's an auteur. And, oh, by the way, that feeds back into my auteur theory.
Sure. Okay, well, I see your point there. I don't think that that's necessarily the way it works, because we have to admit that there is – if we admit that quality in a film and quality in a director's body of work exists outside of our opinions, then we know that our opinions are merely just fallible little remnants, little fragments of what could possibly be the truth. So when I say Alfred Hitchcock is a good director, most people would agree with me. But it doesn't really cover the full spectrum of the quality of Alfred Hitchcock, which exists apart from my opinion. So that is to say that if I say the worst film by Alfred Hitchcock is better than the best film by Gore Verbinski, I'm saying something that must be supported by facts, and it can't just be opinion. And that's the problem when it comes to art. A lot of people say it's all opinions, and that there's no.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. I mean, but that fact is actually coming from opinion.
Yeah, I agree. That's why art is constantly being argued about, which is why I think it's the greatest realm of discourse we have, which is why video game discussion forums like the one we have at Nintendo World Report is such a valuable place to be, I think.
So can we try and bring this back to video games, because we've been talking about movies for like 5 minutes
RFN,
now.
We do movies now.
Well, that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to say that when people argue about the merits of Chibi-Robo, they say, I didn't like this part of Chibi-Robo, but I liked this part of Chibi-Robo. They're actually saying that parts of it may have been successful and other parts may not. Maybe parts didn't match me, but other parts did. So we have to separate the things that are personal from the things that we can actually qualify. And the things that we can qualify can usually be corroborated by other people. So when people say that like Chibi-Robo feels like Metroid for a good portion, but then it fails after a while, then we see that is something that can be reflected by playing Metroid and then playing Chibi-Robo. So that's how we come about something that resembles a fact in an artistic discussion.
In fact, is more of a opinion that many people believe.
I think that it takes evidence, and it takes a discourse and an argument. I think that those things are all what lead us to coming to conclusions about what are the good games. And that's why Miyamoto's on top, because people played it enough and said, we like this. This is good. It wasn't just coincidence that it was, you know, the relativism of those of a select group of people. It's that most people seem to say Mario's a good game. So it rises above other games. Now we have to look at Mario and say, what's so good about it? And according to Chris Kohler, it's the narrative. It's its narrative and its unique gameplay. Those two things combined make it a good game.
We seem to have reached some common ground finally, and maybe the thing is that
something has happened, and much like the Grinch, my heart has grown 3 times, and I believe very much what Evan is saying, that all video games are art. It's just that a higher percentage of video games are bad than there are a percentage of movies that are bad.
You see, the thing is, I wanted to fight Evan, but I feel like hugging him now.
So maybe it's not RFN versus Evan Birchfield anymore.
I just feel like hugging it out.
Hugging it out. Let's hug it out, Bitchfield.
So that's what I've been trying to say. And, I sit here next to my shelf of DVDs, and I wonder if, maybe living an artistic life, viewing art is worthwhile. And I feel like it's the most worthless when someone says, oh, that's your opinion. That's just what you think. And it doesn't affect me. I mean, because if Mike has an opinion that's different from mine, it affects me. And that's something that we've known about each other for the year that we've known each other. it matters. And so I've cared about Johnny's opinion for years. And if Johnny says something, I listen. I don't just try to slough it off as, oh, that's your opinion. And I think that that's what we do in the art world. That's why I think that we need to accept that everything's art and start engaging and discussing how good they are.
I really like your idea of auteur theory applied to video games. It makes a lot of sense, because much like a film, a video game is a collaborative effort headed by one main person.
Mike, are you saying you would like to subscribe to his newsletter?
I would, if one such newsletter existed.
I have a blog.
Evan, do you want to pimp your blog?
Well, we've already pimped his MySpace.
My blog. That's terrible.
If you go back to like episode 6, the entire thing is about his MySpace. Page or something.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, guys, I think it's time to close out the show. It was a very interesting discussion, and
I can't believe that Evan managed to change all of our minds. Congratulations, sir.
That is such is his dark power. Well, okay,
thank you,
folks,
for giving me the chance to come on.
Well, anytime, of course. You're always welcome to stop by. And remember, folks, if you want to send us any more listener mail and Mike's crazy mailbag,
that's
rfn@nintendoworldreport.com.
That's right, rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Come Thursday afternoon or night when this episode is posted, the first question that makes it in to my mailbox will be answered.
And also remember to go to iTunes, subscribe, maybe leave a review if you can, and also dig the podcast. There's going to be a link not only to dig the article, but the podcast as a whole as well in the news article. Go ahead and click that, and then be on your merry way, I suppose. And all of us are going to be on our merry way because it's getting late, and I need to go to eat dinner. So,
I have one last thing. Can I have Jonathan Lindemann? Can I have him tell me what the name was of the 16-bit system that Nintendo released back in the late 80s, early 90s?
Oh, what, the SNES?
What system was that?
The SNES,
dude. You're the only person. Okay. The left SNES? On the planet who calls it the SNES.
SNESy SNES SNES.
I'm sorry. No, that's funny.
Oh, we were on such a classy streak too. Oh well.
I wait to play Super Metroid for the SNES.
Time to go.
Goodbye.
All right, folks. Thank you, John Lindemann, for letting us use your fabulous home for the show.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mike Slans, all the way in Tallahassee.
That's right.
And all the way in Oregon, Evan Bergfield.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to see you back on the show, Evan, or is this your final? It's just your final farewell.
I'm moving up to the north of the state, hopefully within a couple months. So I may be out of commission for a while, but I'd like to get back on.
Alrighty, and there you go, folks. Alright, I've been your host, Carl Castaneda. See you next week.
Peace.